Okay, I'm ready whenever. Oh, well, we'll pretend I am. Good morning. It is just after 10 o'clock, April 29th, 2009, in the North Dakota Public Service Commission hearing room. I'm Kevin Kramer, along with fellow commissioners Brian Culk and Tony Clark. This is a regularly scheduled Public Service Commission meeting. I apologize for being a minute or two late. We just had our had another conference committee on our budget, and I can maybe talk to some of that after the regular agenda, and I can sort of formulate my thoughts.
And tone down your thoughts a little bit.
Yeah, I was calm. It'll be suitable for family radio. At any rate, any opening comments or greetings from my fellow commissioners?
Good morning and welcome.
Also, good morning and welcome. And I, special guest, my dad's in the back row today.
So welcome.
So, Dave, no hard questions today, okay?
You're going to join us in Marion in our Zap the Gap meeting?
That's where the hard questions come. At Zap the Gap meetings. Yeah. With that, I would move passage of items in the consent agenda.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Moving on to the regular agenda, KC1. I move the commission acknowledge the letter of intent, shorten the one-year waiting period between filing a letter of intent and a siting application to 1 day, and assess a filing fee of $15,000 due upon the filing of an application in case number PU09153, Hawthorne Oil Transportation, North Dakota, Inc.'s proposed 12-inch crude oil pipeline in Mountrail County, North Dakota.
Second.
Hawthorne is an affiliate of EOG Resources Incorporated. This is a 12-inch line. It's only 4 miles. It runs from a storage facility that's just southeast of Stanley to a railroad loading facility to be constructed about 2 miles northeast of Stanley. Obviously, those 4 miles are all in Mountrail County, and to facilitate the alternative for transportation of crude oil by railroad. The entire project is expected to cost about $3 million.
All in favor?
Aye.
KC2. I move the commission approve a stipulation of increase for self-bond SB9503-1 and to replace collateral bond CB9503-1 with collateral bond CB9503-2 to increase the total bond amount to $56,950,000 for the consolidated bond area that covers surface coal mining permits NAFK 8405, NAFK 8705, and NAFK 9503 held by the Falkirk Mining Company.
Second.
These just increases in their bond to cover any worst-case scenario that is unlikely to occur.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Ends items in my portfolio, Commissioner Clark.
Item TC1, I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law and order issuing sites or certificate of site compatibility number 11 to Just Wind LLC, authorizing construction of a proposed 368-megawatt wind farm in Logan County, North Dakota, case number PU0754.
Second.
This application has been open for a while. Just to give you a little bit of the background procedurally, we received on February 8th of 2007 a notice of or a letter of intent to file an application from Just Wind, and later that year in September the commission received, and November the commission received a number of 10-year plans from Just Wind. Just Wind had later asked that those 10-year plans be considered an application. Staff deemed that those as applications were not complete, and so had sent a letter to Just Wind asking for additional information to complete the application. In August of last year, Just Wind filed a revised application for this certificate for a 368-megawatt wind farm in Logan County, and then in September they provided additional information. In October of last year, the commission held a public hearing in Napoleon at the Logan County Courthouse. And then subsequent to that, in January, and then again in March and April, the commission received additional information from Just Wind, late-filed exhibits and supplemental information, including some changes on turbine models and turbine location changes, which necessitated they provide more information to the commission. As it stands here today, and what we're going to be approving is a 368-megawatt nameplate generating capacity wind farm with approximately 160 wind turbines in Logan County, North Dakota. Now, I will, as I go through this, describe that there are a few locations that we are not approving at this time, and the reasons for doing this. The total construction of the wind farm, Just Wind indicates they'd like to begin construction in 2009. They estimate the total cost of the project to be $950 million. Just Wind is planning to use Mitsubishi 2.4-megawatt wind turbines, which are a little larger than most of the wind turbines that are currently in operation in the state. Typical turbine in use in North Dakota has been about a 1.5-megawatt turbine, but these are 2.4s. As I mentioned just a few moments ago, there are a few locations that at this time the commission is not approving. There's actually six locations, and in the order we delineate exactly which locations there are. The reason for that is, and something that we haven't run into in previous cases, in Logan County, the county had zoned a 750-foot setback from residences, and so Just Wind in planning its wind farm used that as a guideline. Commission precedent has been to not site turbines closer than 1,400 feet in most of our projects, and we've sort of used that as a rule of thumb for setbacks from occupied residences. So the commission and I certainly felt that if we're going to be siting closer than 1,400 feet, if we're going to be deviating from what we've generally used as a rule of thumb, we needed to have some sort of justification on the record for why we would be siting closer than that. There are six locations that are closer than 1,400 feet, the closest one being about 825 feet. And so we are going to be requiring that for those locations we want some additional information specifically regarding things like ice throws, the decibel level at residences that close. We're a little bit more familiar in our past applications with decibel levels related to a little bit longer setbacks, and so we want to be assured that the residents' noise levels will be significantly low to not cause problems. We also did require for those six turbines that they receive consent letters from the affected owners of those residences, and we did receive those, but we still want to get the supplemental information from Just Wind before we approve those sites. Within the order, as I indicated, there are the sites that we are not approving, but the rest of the wind farm is approved, and they'll be able to move forward on construction. The other notable thing, which received some discussion at our hearing and also in work sessions with the commission, is the issue of whooping cranes. And because this is a little bit closer to the flyway than some of the wind farms we've dealt with lately that are a little bit further east, Just Wind is working with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service as well as other developers in that are active in the region on creating a habitat conservation plan, which should mitigate any potential impacts on whooping cranes. And once that is complete, they'll be filing that with the commission.
All in favor?
A couple comments, if I could, on that. Just I would agree with pretty much everything Commissioner Clark said. Just the one point that even if they provide this additional data, there's still a lot of questions that I think are going to come up on the noise because there's so much variability on how you measure the noise. If one house is 1,400 feet away from two different turbines, depending on the shape of the land. So I don't think there should be the assumption that just you provide this information that it's going to give you the approval of those six additional towers. So this, I think, is going to be a big issue for the commission on how we're going to deal with this setbacks from residents. And a second thing for the whooping cranes, we would really encourage, I know that many of the groups have looked at a holistic study of the fish and wildlife. They should look at these whooping cranes as a study all the way from where they nest down in Texas all the way north instead of trying to piecemeal this on the backs of individual wind developers. So right now I think Just Wind is doing a very good job being part of this conservation plan, but I think the Fish and Wildlife Service needs to look at this all the way from the beginning to the end so this doesn't put too much burden on individual developers. So, but I do support this as well.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
TC2, I move the Commission file an application with the Burley County District Court, South Central Judicial District, for appointment as trustee of Sustainable Systems Limited Liability Company, doing business as Montola of Culbertson, Montana, under North Dakota Century Code, Chapter 60.02.1, in Public Service Commission case number GE09112. Sustainable Systems LLC is a company that's doing business in Culbertson, Montana, as Montola. Sustainable Systems is an affiliate of an affiliate of eventually the lead company is a company called GreenShift. This is an insolvency, and this is a roving grain barn license in North Dakota that we're going to be seeking to be appointed trusteeship over, in which we have been working very closely with the Montana Department of Agriculture. There are producers in both North Dakota and Montana that are affected. Of course, in North Dakota, the facility isn't here, but they are required to have a roving grain buyer license here. The facility and the assets are all available in Montana and not here. So we have been working closely with their licensing officials on this particular insolvency. In our discussions with Montana officials who have the records on file, we believe that North Dakota claimants are owed about $624,000, almost $625,000 for sale of safflower. There are, at least we know of, we believe, about 17 North Dakota claimants. Now, this is all subject to change. We, of course, have notice requirements, and others could step forward and make claim, but it is a fair amount of money when you're talking about $625,000 that are owed. Because we're dealing with two jurisdictions, there are some unique aspects to this particular insolvency that could open some avenues of relief for those producers. On our administrative portion of the agenda, we're going to be talking about a consent agreement, which the commission may be signing on to. It's a consent agreement that the Montana Department of Agriculture has been working with Sustainable Systems, and basically what it would create is three pools of money for producers to potentially be paid out of the, and it would be each pool that I'll be talking about is, it's in sequential order. First you go to the first pool, then second, then third. The first pool would be the inventories that are available themselves. So the inventories at the Montana Department of Agriculture, seed, oil, grains, other assets that they may have available under their statutes is the first pool. And it's our understanding that North Dakota producers will be able to be paid out of that just as Montana producers are. To the degree that that does not cover all of the liabilities that are out there for producers, the second pool is the bond that's available. Now, we have a bond of $130,000 in North Dakota. There's a bond of $113,000 in Montana. North Dakota producers could be paid out of our bond, Montana producers out of the Montana bond. To the degree that that doesn't cover it all, then there is a third pool, which would be monies available from GreenShift to make up the remainder of the liabilities that are out there. So this is a little bit different than some of the other insolvencies that we've dealt with, but we're hoping that in structuring it as so, we may have a more positive outcome for North Dakota producers than would be available if just the bond was open to us.
All in favor?
Aye. That ends the items in my portfolio.
Very good. Commissioner Kolk.
I just have one item in my portfolio today. Upon a showing of good cause, I move the Commission grant Otter Tail Corporation's request to suspend the procedural schedule and continue the hearings in case number PU08742 and case number PU08862 and request the Administrative Law Judge issue the corresponding order.
Second.
Currently, we're scheduled to start hearing this rate case May 11th. This motion will allow settlement discussion to continue between Otter Tail, the large industrial group, and the advocacy staff. It is expected that we'll reschedule this meeting within the next 30 days. Once they come to an agreement, it'll come back to commission review. It doesn't necessarily mean we'll agree with it, but I think this is a good idea, and it gives the folks involved a little more time to come up with what's best for the consumers.
All in favor?
Aye. All right. That ends the items on the agenda. Are there any announcements anybody has? We're going to Marion tonight for another Zap the Gap meeting, as Commissioner Clark talked about earlier. We look forward to a large crowd of enthusiastic cell phone owners who would like to use them. Anything else coming out up that I'm not thinking of and I don't have my calendar in front of me? If not, maybe I'll just give you guys a little update on my time downstairs with the conference committee. Our discussions focused on, not surprisingly, on the metrology lab, and I never cease to be amazed at how difficult it is to get two chambers of the legislature that are controlled by Republicans to cut government when three Republican officials are trying to help them do it. But nonetheless, it seems to always be a problem. So,
plus the governor.
I mean, anyway, the discussion was not so much about keeping the metrology lab open as it was how to close it properly. And so I think what they want to do, set a time certain for when it would be closed. Perhaps that time will be a year into the biennium, as opposed to letting run to the end of the biennium, at which time they'll spend another 4 months discussing it. Give us that being the Public Service Commission, a lot of leeway in working with, I stress the Department of Commerce, please, in finding somebody in the private sector that may be interested in taking our equipment at a very low cost, and I assured them it would be low. Can you get it out of here? And then finding somebody that could, and then letting the market dictate the rates, which, as you know, have been highly subsidized for years. And then and keep that amenity, that being a metrology lab in North Dakota, in private hands with market rates. And then, of course, the Public Service Commission being sort of the anchor client at, we anticipate the costs, our costs have been about $30,000 per biennium to send our equipment down to St. Paul for calibration here that we, you know, whatever that number would be, they may even subsidize that, they talked about. So that those are amendments that they're working on now, and there does seem to be some consensus among the group to do that, to close the lab, to make the equipment available at a discount rate to somebody in the private sector. But I don't think it's, you heard earlier talk of an RFP. I think what they really are looking for is somebody to go out and try and find an entity that would be willing to go into this business and lose less money than the state does, I would think, every year. So at any rate, there was that discussion. There was the moment I referred to earlier, yet one more dig by one of the legislators that they shouldn't have the meeting on Saturday because the Public Service Commission doesn't show up on Saturdays, to which I said, please do not, I'm not going to allow the legislature's inability to plan their schedules affect my weekends. And it was met with a groan. But it felt good. We sit up here for 4 months every 2 years and put our schedules on hold. I'm not inclined to apologize for not being there when they have to meet on Saturday because they couldn't get their work done. So with that, any questions?
So they haven't come to a complete agreement on your budget yet, and you're saying this type of stuff?
You know, Dave, I have been through this so many times in various agencies. And frankly, until I got on the Public Service Commission, I literally did cut the budget every biennium in every agency that I had sole control over. And I never have gotten what I wanted out of them being the nice guy. I shouldn't say what I wanted out of them, what the people of the state should expect out of them. So anyway.
So if I understand the metrology thing, they want you to basically give away the equipment to somebody else who's going to charge you to have the work done?
That's true, but it should be understood that this is the second biennium that we as a Public Service Commission have tried to close it. We have recommended closing it, not because we don't like the metrology program, but it generates very little revenue, costs quite a bit of revenue, and we frankly have other priorities in this era of energy growth in our state, not the least of which is heavy siting opportunity, siting responsibilities of lots of energy conversion, transmission, pipelines, and things that you know a lot about. But also, the person that happens to have that position now, that being the state metrologist, is also part-time pipeline safety inspector, and the Department of Transportation, who funds, I always forget this number, but is it 60% or 40%? 60% of the pipeline safety program in the Public Service Commission is requiring us to have a full-time pipeline safety inspector. So the opportunity presents itself to, on the one hand, close the metrology lab, on the other hand, without changing personnel, create a full-time pipeline inspector, be in compliance with federal law, and meet the demands, frankly, of a growing pipeline infrastructure that is obvious, I think, to most people paying any attention.
And metrology itself is not inherently a government function. I mean, there are certain things that are government functions that even if you had to subsidize them, you do anyway. I mean, if you have a state crime lab, it probably doesn't pay for itself, but you have it because the government's the only one who can do it. With metrology services, these are things that are provided by private businesses. Effectively having the state, in the business of metrology crowds out any possibility that you would ever have a private metrology business in North Dakota.
I think it's worth noting that the discussion of the rail rate fund came up, and there was a proposal thrown out that the House cut our $900,000 to $450,000. The Senate restored it back to $950,000. The House is coming back with a suggestion that they cut it all together as a good faith showing to the railroad. Thank you for being such good partners in the recent years, which, is well and good. And then with the stick that if you become a bad partner in the next 2 years, we'll put $2 million in it 2 years from now. But I think what they settled on is that they're probably going to leave it at $900,000. They did agree, Dave, that, we had requested an additional three FTEs in our public utilities division, which is by far the smallest public utilities division in the country, dealing with perhaps by far the largest public utilities caseload of any public utilities division in the country. We asked for three extra to deal with that. The governor cut it down to two. The House cut it down to one. The Senate complied. Agreed with the House's recommendation, so we are down to one new FTE in our public utilities division to deal with 50-plus siting cases and several economic regulatory cases, and we'll do our best with it.
What do they have in your budget for raises for staff? Is it 5 and 5? And how about the elected people? How about the three of you? I'm just curious.
Well, as everyone knows, we're overpaid as elected officials. I don't think there's any. I think it's 5 and 5, isn't it? Still 5 and 5.
We'll get what everybody gets. I don't even know what our salaries are pegged at.
I don't know either. But the tradition has
been that state officials get the same increase everyone else does, or not get the same increase.
I think there's one exception.
Everyone else
this
does
year,
not
but,
get.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I think though, with regard to the equity pool, which is a question that's pretty important to us, dealing with so many scientific and specialty. Special skilled people that where the market has driven up salaries and wages for those folks. That's been a challenge for us through this whole equity fight. I find it amusing that through all their deliberation and chest pounding that they've come to the conclusion that the Office of Management and Budget should have the pool and then determine how to allocate it when that's exactly how this process was done in the first place. But nonetheless, hopefully we'll get some equity dollars for their engineers and scientific staff that we need to do to keep quality people on our staff so that the ratepayers and the taxpayers are at least have a fighting chance.
Dave, if I could too, I came in with a new perspective in January and got briefed in the metrology lab and the way the public utilities and pipeline safety. And I had not talked to these two commissioners, and we came to the same conclusions that they already came to. So this is not a dig-in position the commission's been on. It's just if you step back and look at this, it makes sense. You close the lab, you get those extra people. We were just down yesterday in Ellendale, and they want us to keep waiving these timelines to get things done faster at one hand, and the next thing they're giving us the resources to do it, and we're giving a way to do that without increasing the budget too much. It doesn't make sense.
Then I just have one quick clarification about sustainable systems. Is the plant closed in Culberson then?
It is not operating right now.
It's not operating right now, yes.
One of the interesting things about that inventory that they have, those crops were raised specific to their specs, and Montana State University created those varieties. So it'll be interesting to see how some of that product does in the marketplace, very specialized varieties of of safflower and sunflowers. So it'll be. But at, on the other hand, it is wonderful to have the opportunity to for our producers to perhaps receive some funds from the liquidation of assets, because that's not always the case.
So it's safflower and sunflower.
It is. Safflower is the kind of the main crop, isn't it? Is there sunflower involved, or is it just safflower? The sunflowers weren't delivered. That's right. Yeah, they're contracts. But yeah.
And on the wind farm, when you take a look at the six sites, you'll still have to make another decision about.
We'll have to make a subsequent decision on those. And at our work session, we outlined a number of questions for Just Wind to answer. Rather than hold up, you know, the vast majority of wind turbines waiting on that information for those six, we decided that it was most prudent to move forward in this way, and they can provide us with that information, and we can make our decision from there.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Thank you. We will sign orders and come back in about 10 minutes.